Welcome to the Nicole Sandler Show for Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. It was day two of Donald Trump's second impeachment trial. Needless to say, I was listening and watching, and we carried it live because there's nothing else that's important today. So we pick up the action at 5 p.m. Eastern as Congressman Eric Swalwell was the impeachment manager speaking. Just a heads up.
Those doors to orient you at home are the doors that the President of the United States walks through when he or she gives a State of the Union address. You may have heard one man yelled, "No violence," and another responded, "It's too late for that."
Wow.
They don't listen without that. They were there to stop the certification of the election. At this point inside the House chamber, we can now hear the pounding on the doors. At 2:35 p.m., members on the House floor were told an evacuation route was secured and it was time to leave. This video shows members of Congress exiting to the side of the podium where we would go through the House lobby and downstairs. Because of coronavirus restrictions, congressional members had been waiting in the gallery for their time to speak just one level above the House floor. Representatives, staff, journalists all took cover under their chairs, helped each other put on their gas masks, and held hands as rioters gathered outside. Here in this slide, you see Representative Jason Crow comforting our colleague, Representative Susan Wild. The rioters continued to surround the House chamber, flooding the halls and kicking on the doors as they passed them. This security video shows Ashley Babbitt, followed by others in the mob, turning the corner toward the House lobby doors where the members were leaving.
Eric Swalwell is the impeachment manager working right
Chairman
now.
Chairman McGovern was one of the last members to leave the floor. As he left through the House lobby just after 2:40 p.m., he was spotted by the mob.
They're showing James McGovern, congressman, who apparently tried to keep the vote going after Nancy Pelosi was ushered out. This is chilling. Just chilling.
Minutes later, at 2:44 p.m., Ashley Babbitt attempted to climb through a shattered window into the House lobby.
Oy.
To protect the members in the lobby, an officer discharged his weapon, and she was killed. I want to warn everyone that the next video, which shows her death, is graphic.
Yeah, there's a gun. You're trying to break through the door to the chamber, to the House chamber. And she's dead.
Inside the chamber, representatives, staff, and journalists remain trapped in the gallery, one floor above the House floor, and heard the gunshot. My colleague, Representative Dan Kildee, produced this recording.
Take your pens off!
Yeah. The fuck?
Take your pens off!
Pens off!
Wow.
Out of fear that they'd be seen or taken by the mob, my colleagues were telling each other to take off their congressional pins. That buzzing sound that you hear in the background of these videos was the sound of the gas masks. It was not until approximately 2:50 p.m., about 6 minutes after the shooting, downstairs, remaining members, staff, and journalists in the gallery were finally able to flee. In this security footage video, you can see them exiting. Many members are still wearing their gas masks. They walk just feet away from where Capitol Police are holding an insurrectionist at gunpoint. Just minutes earlier, that insurrectionist had tried to open the gallery door and thankfully was stopped by a tactical team.
These videos are just heartbreaking and terrifying. I've been recording this all day long, and I have tons of stuff to show you, but I thought it more important to carry it live after this is going on. So we may run through what transpired earlier today as the evidence they went through
on
Friday.
Although members were now being moved to another location, the mob continued to fight, to stop the count, to find the members, to engage with the police. The building was not yet secure.
This is unreal.
This security video from 2:56 p.m. shows the mob in the House of Representatives wing on the second floor of the Capitol. Insurrectionists who are still inside the building are fighting with the police, who are overwhelmed and trying to get them out.
Oh, wow. And now they're showing the Capitol Police fighting with them. Over 140 of the Capitol Police were injured seriously. Seriously.
Throughout this presentation, we have been very careful to not share where members of Congress were taken on the paths they followed to get out and off the floors.
Good.
But that very issue was under discussion by the insurrectionists themselves. One example comes from an FBI affidavit, which stated that a leader of a militia group known as the Oath Keepers received messages while he was at the Capitol. The leader was given directions to where representatives were thought to be sheltering.
Wow.
And instructions to, quote, turn on gas, seal them in.
Oh, my God.
And as you know, the threat to the Senate was no less than that of the members of the House. The mob approached the Senate with the same purpose, fulfilling President Trump's goal of stopping the count, delaying the certification of the Electoral College votes of the American people. As you heard from Manager Plaskett, Vice President Pence was moved away from the area near the Senate chamber around 2:25 p.m. By that time, rioters had breached several areas close to this chamber, and they were flooding the hallways just outside and nearby. The Senate chamber was not evacuated until 2:30 p.m. The mob had been in the building for more than 15 minutes. This new security footage of the senators and staff leaving the chamber will be displayed on the screens. It is silent.
And you see them being ushered away. The terror they must have been feeling at that moment. I just can't imagine. Hearing all this for the last, what, 4 or 5 hours is terrifying. Just terrifying.
You cannot see it in this footage, but quick-thinking Senate floor staff grabbed and protected the electoral ballots that the mob was after. Those of you who were here that day will recall that once you left the Senate floor, you moved through a hallway to get to safety. That hallway was near where Officer Goodman had encountered a mob and led them upstairs and away from the Senate chamber. You know how close you came to the mob.
Yeah.
Some of you, I understand, could hear them. But most of the public does not know how close these rioters came to you.
They showed video of Officer Goodman saving Mitt Romney's life. Telling him, go,
hallway,
let's go this way, and they ran.
I paced it off. You were just 58 steps away.
Oh, my God.
From where the mob was amassing and where police were rushing to stop them.
Wow.
They were yelling. In this security video, you can see how the Capitol Police created a line and blocked the hallway with their bodies to prevent rioters at the end of the hall from reaching you and your staff.
Wow. Wow. And you can see on the dots they're showing on this graphic, the red dots are the rioters. The orange dots are the senator. The orange dot is where the senators were at that moment. And now people in the YouTube chat room are warning me because apparently Randy Rhodes was suspended by YouTube for 90 days for airing this. Well, I'm sorry, this is news. This is a news program. I'd be derelict if I didn't run it. I am rebroadcasting from C-SPAN, though, not CNN or NBC or any other commercial entity, if that helps.
Because this is security footage that you have not seen before, I want to play it again.
Okay. Thank you, Eric Swalwell. So they're showing the, I guess...
Top of the screen.
Here we go.
It's the other end of that hallway where the mob has amassed and the officers are rushing to...
Oh, my God.
You.
They're rushing to them while the members, the Congress, members of Congress are being squirreled past to safety, hopefully to safety. And knowing how close they are, Swalwell said 58 steps away, and you see them running. Again, that video, which I have, which we'll probably run through on Friday, of Mitt Romney being turned around by Officer Goodman and run, and told to run, and they ran together.
Additional security footage shows how Leader Schumer and the members of his protective detail had a near miss with the mob. They came within just yards of rioters.
Wow.
And had to turn around.
Oh, my God. Yards.
Here in this new video, you see Leader Schumer walking up a ramp. Going up the ramp with his detail, he'll soon go out of view.
Boy, he doesn't seem to be hurrying. Come on, Chucky, move. Oh, shit. And now they're running in the other direction.
Seconds later, they return and run back down the hallway. And officers immediately shut the door and use their bodies to keep them safe.
Oh, my God.
At 2:45 p.m., shortly after senators were ushered to safety from the Senate floor, insurrectionists reached this Senate gallery. The following video was filmed by a New Yorker reporter.
Oh, my God.
Minutes later,
the
insurrectionists invaded and desecrated the Senate floor.
Oh, my God.
These vandals shouted and rifled through the desks in this room. They took pictures of documents and of themselves, celebrating that they had taken over the floor and stopped the counting of Electoral College votes.
This is sickening. And by the way, they spent all morning, all early afternoon, building the case, showing how Donald Trump incited this every step of the way.
Look here, look.
Ted Cruz's objection to the Arizona.
This is objection. He was going to sell us out all along.
Really?
Look, objection to counting electoral votes on the state of Arizona.
Wait, no, that's...
Oh, no, that's okay.
These people don't even know what they want. Oh, my God, they're such idiots.
This guy was so good.
Oh, my God. This is good stuff. Oh, man.
Larry Brock, who was arrested for his role in the insurrection, was photographed on the Senate floor wearing a helmet, tactical gear, and carrying flex cuffs.
Yeah. Zip ties to
this
handcuff
man,
people with, hostages.
Also in the Senate gallery is Eric Munchell. Like Brock, he was dressed in what appears to be tactical gear, also holding up flex cuffs. If the doors to this chamber had been breached just minutes earlier, imagine what they could have
there
done.
There would have been a massacre.
With those cuffs.
There would have been a massacre. I can't
After
even
After insurrectionists
think about
occupied
it.
The Capitol and stopped the joint session from counting the votes, the Capitol was in lockdown for 5 hours.
Wow.
As long as it took to get back to the Capitol, to get back to the certification of the election, it could have been so much longer. Or we might not have been able to have resumed at all. As horrific as it was, 140 officers injured, three officers who ultimately lost their lives. We all know that awful day could have been so much worse. The only reason it was not was because of the extraordinary bravery of the men and women of the Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Departments. For hours and hours, these insurrectionists were in hand-to-hand combat with these brave men and women.
Wow.
Like some of you, I come from a law enforcement family. My dad was a cop. My two brothers, my little brothers, are cops who walk the beat today. I'm proud of them. And like in every law enforcement family, When we hang up the phone, we don't only say, I love you, we say, be safe.
Yeah, no kidding.
So let's focus now on the attack and what it was like for the officers defending the Capitol that day.
And by the way, if you're just joining us, they laid out the case starting at 11 o'clock this morning on how Donald Trump is responsible for everything that happened that day. Everything that happened that day.
Here's an audio recording from the radio traffic of the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department describing the violence.
Cruiser 50, the crowd is using munitions against us.
Against
us. Airspray in the crowd.
And I heard Officer Sicknick was a Trump supporter. They don't care. Ugh. These are
DSO, I need a re-up up here.
This is police calling for help.
You hear the officer describe they're using munitions. The rioters are using munitions against us.
Yeah. The Blue Lives Matter people.
This video shows how the sprays that were described were used against the officers.
Oh, that spray is coming from the rioters to the cops. Wow.
In a separate Metropolitan Police Department radio traffic recording, you can hear an officer when he realizes that the insurrectionists had overtaken the police line.
Oh, wow.
Cruiser 50, we lost the line! We lost the line! Yep. All NPD, pull back! All NPD, pull back up to the upper deck! All NPD, pull back to the upper deck! ASAP! All NPD, come back to the upper deck! Upper deck!
If you have a Republican senator, call their office now.
That's the code for emergency. Officer in need of assistance. His words, we've lost the line. Hours after members of the House and Senate had left this area, on the west front of the building, the mob continued to grow, continued to beat the officers as they tried to get in. In this new security video, you can see the mob attacking officers with a crutch, a hockey stick, a bullhorn, and a Trump flag.
And it didn't matter that some who are dead were Trump supporters. Sicknick was a Trump supporter, and they murdered him. They beat him to death. Yet they are the Blue Lives Matter people. My ass. This video is just terrifying. This is security video, so there is no audio on it. But you can see the cops in the doorway and throngs of a mob.
I want to show you that
pushing
same
their
attack
way in.
From the officer's perspective, from his body camera footage.
Oh my God. And they're pulling at him. They're poking at him. This is the time to call your Republican senators and tell them to do what is right or stay home. If they're not there, their vote, their numbers don't count.
This body camera footage is from 4:27 p.m., over 2 hours from when the Capitol was first breached. Mm. The attack on police that afternoon was constant.
And Trump still hadn't spoken.
Metropolitan Police Officer Michael Fanone, a 20-year police veteran with four daughters, was part of a line of officers protecting the Capitol. He was one of three officers that the mob dragged down the stairs. When they dragged him, they stole his badge, his radio, his ammunition magazine.
Oh, my God.
And they tased him.
Oh, my God.
Triggering a heart attack. Here he describes his experience.
Oh, God.
It looked like a medieval battle scene. It was some of the most brutal combat I've ever encountered. At one point, I got tased. People were yelling out, we got one.
Wow.
Officer Christina Lowry, who regularly serves in MPD's Narcotics and Specialized Investigation Division, also protected the front Capitol entrance. Here's her experience.
I mean, I can't say enough about the officers that were there, the officers that were on the front line. And when I say the front line, I mean literally officers that were in a line stopping these people that were beating them with metal poles. They were spraying them with bear mace. I mean, they did everything in their power to not let those people in. And this was going on for hours.
Wow. Wow.
Around 4:30
p.m., Trump at this time? Still
hours
silent.
Into the Capitol riots. Officer Daniel Hodges was protecting a West Side Capitol entrance when rioters who were trying to stop the certification trapped him between two doors. When Officer Hodges was interviewed later, this is how he described what was happening.
They threw down a huge metal object that hit me in the head. I was also knocked down. The medical mask I was wearing at the time got pulled up over my eyes, so I was on the ground and blinded, and they started just attacking me from all sides.
Oh my God.
Rioters crushed Officer Hodges. He was wedged in the doorway, blood dripping from his
crushed
mouth. He was struggling to breathe, all while the insurrectionists hit him.
Oh my God.
Officer Hodges' experience reminds you of what he and many other officers experienced that day, what they went through. We're also reminded of the three officers who lost their lives.
Two killed themselves.
Capitol Hill police officers Sicknick, Liebengood, and Metropolitan Police Officer Smith. And many law enforcement families, we pray for our loved ones, and we know the scripture of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 9.
Come on, leave the Jesus stuff out of it.
Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. I'm sorry I have to show you the next video.
I am too.
But in it, you will see how blessed we were that on that hellish day, we had a peacemaker like Officer Hodges, protecting our lives, our staff's lives, this Capitol, and the certification process. May we do all we can in this chamber to make sure that never happens again.
Oh, we've seen this. This is where he's crushed, and we just heard from him. And this one officer is being crushed. This video is just devastating. It's all devastating. It's just sickening. And there are reports that Josh Hawley is sitting in the gallery with his feet up, reading something, not paying attention. Wow. And I guess that's the end of Eric Swalwell's presentation. Unbelievable. That might be it.
Mr. President, we'll now have a recess for dinner and we'll resume at 6:15.
Okay.
The Senate will stand in recess.
So they are now in recess until 6:15. It is now 5:26. What we have seen today is evidence, proof that Donald Trump led this insurrection. He fought for it for months, really. They laid out the case all day long that that Donald Trump started the laying the groundwork for this months before the election. Oh, I've got stuff. I've got notes because I've been glued to this television all day long. So it started at about 11 o'clock this morning with, once again, Jamie Raskin, calling the chamber to order. And you know, both sides, each side has 18 hours, a maximum of 8 hours spread over 2 days to make their case. I thought they were going to do it the way they've always done it, where one side goes a couple of hours and the other side. But apparently the way they're doing it, Jamie Raskin is taking his 16 hours today and tomorrow. And then Trump's lawyers, whoever they are, can will go for the next 16 hours on I guess, tomorrow's Thursday, right? On Friday and Saturday. So we can go through a lot of this tomorrow. I mean, on Friday. Sorry, I'm in shock. As disturbed as I was the day that this all happened on January 6th, and the days following that, going through this, seeing this video that we hadn't seen before, is I don't know the words. I really don't know the words. If you would like to call in, this is when we can talk about it. 954-889-6410 is the number. If you're on Skype, you can Skype into Nicole Sandler. But I'll tell you what, I will play for you some of the clips, some of the video clips from earlier today. You want to know that Donald Trump, how he incited this? Well, let's start. We'll just start from the beginning. This is Jamie Raskin. At the beginning of the day today, they gaveled in, I want to say, at 12 noon this afternoon. And here's how Jamie Raskin got everything started. Hold on. I need to turn off the sound here. Where's the sound coming from? hold on one second. It's probably still coming from, where is it coming from? I've got so many different windows open. That's the problem here. Okay. Not coming from you.
Just minutes earlier.
Okay. No. So where? It's not you. It's not. Okay. From there. Mute. I'm just going to mute everything that's up here. No, it's still showing. It's still coming up. Hold on. What else do I have open on this? Do I have the, there we go. Okay, I had a C-SPAN window open. All right, so now, here we go. This is Jamie Raskin earlier today at the beginning of today's session of day two of impeachment trial number two for Donald Trump. Here we go.
Worse than someone who falsely shouts fire in a crowded theater. It's more like a case where the town fire chief, who's paid to put out fires, sends a mob not to yell fire in a crowded theater,
right,
but to actually set the theater on fire. And who then, when the fire alarms go off and the calls start flooding into the fire department asking for help, does nothing but sit back, encourage the mob to continue its rampage, and watch the fire spread on TV with glee and delight. So then we say this fire chief should never be allowed to hold this public job again, and you're fired and you're permanently disqualified, and he objects.
Yeah.
And he says, we're violating his free speech rights just because he's pro-mob or pro-fire or whatever it might be. Come on. I mean, you really don't need to go to law school to figure out what's wrong with that argument. Here's
no.
The key. Undoubtedly, a private person can run around on the street expressing his or her support for the enemies of the United States and advocating the overthrow of the United States government. You've got a right to do that under the First Amendment.
Yeah, you do.
But if the president spent all of his days doing that, uttering the exact same words, expressing support for the enemies of the United States and for overthrowing the government, is there anyone here who doubts that this would be a violation of his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and that he or she could be impeached for doing that?
Not at all. But see, this is why I keep saying that everybody, I can close this window now because they're not coming back while we're here. And this way I can play for you the other videos. So everybody who was, watching, knew that what he was doing. Jamie Raskin said Trump was not an innocent bystander. Instead, he incited the insurrection. He became the insider in chief. He said this was the greatest betrayal of the presidential oath in the history of the United States. All right, sorry. What I started to say is right now, everybody who lives in a state where there's one or two Republican senators, get on the phone and call their offices now. Now, they're on a dinner break. They probably won't answer the phone, but leave a message. And don't bother calling senators from other states. They want to hear from their constituents only. Leave them your address. if you dare, your phone number, and tell them that what they have done, what they are doing, is clearing the way for this. I'm rarely speechless, you know that, but I'm devastated by this. I called Marco Rubio's office and Rick Scott's office. I can't believe those are the two senators from Florida. But here's the deal. If they're so afraid of their voters to go against Donald Trump, who is a treasonous piece of shit, who almost got all those members of Congress killed, then they don't deserve their jobs. So if they're so afraid, they don't have to show up. Tell them to stay home Saturday and Sunday, which is probably when the vote's going to happen, because they got to get it all wrapped up by Monday so they could go on recess for President's Day week. I'm not kidding. If they're not there, then their number is not counted. If only 80 senators are there when the vote is taken, all they need are 2/3 of the 80 senators present to impeach the motherfucker. So tell them, if you're a chicken shit, that's fine. We know you're a chicken shit. Don't show up. Stay home. There you go. If they don't show up, their number is not counted. They're not counted towards the 100 senators. They need 2/3 of the senators present when they vote. So please, if you live in a state with a Republican senator or two, call them. Call them every day. Don't let up. Be nice. Just say, I don't understand how Senator Rubio could even think about voting to acquit this man. Look what he did. So what did he do? Well, here's Congressman Joe Neguse, another one of the Democratic House impeachment managers. And what he's going to do is tell you how looking through my notes to see where Neguse came in. I've got all kinds of Raskin stuff from this morning. He laid out the case of Trump setting the stage for the big lie months before the election.
Now, some have said that President Trump's remarks, his speech on January 6th, was just a speech. Well, let me ask you this. When in our history has a speech led thousands of people to storm our nation's capital with weapons?
Yeah, really? When?
To scale the walls, break windows, kill a Capitol police officer. This was not just a speech.
Nope.
It didn't just happen. And as you evaluate the facts that we present to you, it will become clear exactly where that mob came from. Because here's the thing, President Trump's words, as you'll see on January 6th, in that speech, just like the mob's actions, were carefully chosen. Those words had a very specific meaning to that crowd. And how do we know this? Because in the weeks prior to, during, and after the election, he used the same words
over and over again. Funny how that works.
You will hear over and over three things. You can see them on the screens. First,
the big lie.
What lead manager Raskin referred to as the big lie.
Yep.
That the election was stolen, full of fraud, rigged. You will hear over and over him using that lie to urge his supporters to never concede and stop the steal.
Yep. Stop the steal. And then they go on because he talked about the provocation, right? The attack and the harm. So let's go to the next Joe Neguse.
Five people lost their lives on that terrible,
that day,
tragic day.
Two more since. Two more cops killed themselves.
A woman was shot dead 50 feet from where we later certified the election results. And for those who question just how bad it was, criminal complaints recently unsealed by the Department of Justice are more than revealing. You'll see one of these documents on the screen.
They're showing an affidavit.
In the charging affidavit of one of the leaders of the Proud Boys, we learned that members of this group said, I'm going to quote, they would have killed Mike Pence if given the chance.
They would have killed Mike Pence if
in
given
another,
the chance.
We learned of a tweet in real time while they were in the building stating, we broke into the Capitol. We got inside. We did our part.
Wow.
We were looking for Nancy Pelosi to shoot her in the frickin' brain, but we didn't find her. And for anyone who suggests otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to this.
These defendants themselves have told you exactly why they were here.
Yep, they did.
You'll see this in the trial.
Because Trump told them.
In the halls of the Capitol, on social media, in news interviews, and in charging documents, they confirm.
Yep.
They were following the president's orders.
That's it. He told them to do it, and they were following his orders. So let me tell you a little bit more of what Joe Neguse says before I move on.
Here's what he said.
To Joaquin Castro. Again and again, Trump kept saying telling his supporters at rallies that they cannot let the Democrats steal the election. He went to court. He tried, but ignored the rulings, around 60 of them, all thrown out because there was no grounds there. There was no there. Trump also tried but failed to get the Justice Department, tried to pressure Congress, then tried to pressure Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to certify the electoral votes. That failed. Ignoring danger, Trump didn't just tell them to fight like hell. He told them where, how, and when. He gave them a save the date to go to the Capitol on January 6th. At what time? The exact time when the joint session of Congress was meeting to certify Biden's victory. Neguse then walks through Trump's speech January 6th, where Trump uses words he had over the months telling his supporters. He used speech to incite and inflame them further, to stop the steal, stop the certification of the results. Quote, Trump said, you don't concede when theft's involved. And he said that Trump's January 6th speech at the Ellipse was a call to arms. So then Joe Neguse moves from the provocation to the attack. He says that his colleagues will go through that in greater detail, which is what they just did. But he also says that Trump had the duty as commander in chief to stop the violence at the Capitol against the senators, Congress, staff, police. But instead, it showed, we see the mob shouting, fight for Trump. And the rioters saying that they were invited by Trump to storm the Capitol on January 6th. All right, so let's move a little bit ahead, right? Joaquin Castro was the next impeachment manager up. And as you can see from the slide, if you're watching on YouTube or one of the other streams, as long as we're still up on YouTube, thank you. This was July 19th, 107 days before the election.
Can you give a direct answer? You will accept the election?
I have to see. Look, I have to see. No, I'm not going to just say
July
19th. I'm not
going to say it. September 23rd, 41 days before the election.
Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We don't want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Senators, the President of the United States said, quote, there won't be a transition of power. There'll be a continuation.
Yeah.
President Trump was given every opportunity to tell his supporters, yes, if I lose, I will peacefully transfer power to the next president. Instead, he told his supporters the only way he could lose the election is if it was stolen.
Yeah, he said that over and over again.
In tweet after tweet, he made sweeping allegations about election fraud that couldn't possibly be true. But that was the point. He didn't care if the claims were true. He wanted to make sure that his supporters were angry.
Yeah.
Like the election was being ripped away from them. On May 24th, 6 months before the election, he tweeted, "It will be the greatest rigged election in history."
Unbelievable.
How could he possibly know it would be the greatest rigged election in history 6 months before the election happened? And
how
on
could
June
he
22nd,
know?
More
he
of the same.
Know.
Rigged 2020 election. It will be the scandal of our
Hello?
Times.
Hold on a second.
Again.
Okay, thank you.
About an election that had not even happened. On July.
Oh, okay, so that's the end of the video. So that's Joaquin Castro, not Julian Castro. This is his brother. And he is laying out the evidence linking specific language from Donald Trump's Stop the Count and Stop the Steal as a call to arms. Somebody called in. Who's this?
This is Tim from South Bend, Indiana.
Hey, Tim. Have you been watching this today?
I've been listening to a lot of it, mostly on progressive talk radio. And I just wanted to call to thank you, because you inspired me to go ahead and call my congressmen. And I didn't realize that both were Republicans.
Oh, you're two senators in Indiana? Yeah, I believe your two senators are both Republicans in Indiana. Yep.
Yeah. And I was very respectful.
Uh-huh.
I wish everyone... Now, I want to make sure I talk to a person, and I you know, told them that I felt that, you know, they need to be on the right side of history and not part of the insurrection,
mm-hmm.
and that the world was watching them, and that, you know, I pray that they do the right thing and follow the Constitution.
Good for you.
It's no fun to lose.
I'm sorry about that.
You know, and so on and so forth for the American people, so... Again, I had to call and thank you because you were the one that sort of pushed me over the edge to say, yeah, now's a good time to be calling. I thought, you're right, because tomorrow when the Republicans get up there and start making their stupid speeches, I won't be able to even listen to it.
Yeah, you know what? They won't be doing it tomorrow. If what I read is correct, each side has 16 hours, 8 hours in a day. So today they start at 11 a.m. They should end around 7. That'll be 8 hours. Tomorrow they have another 8 hours. And then the Republicans get the next 2 days. So, yeah. So tomorrow is going to be more of this. They're just hitting us over the head with all of it. And by the time Friday rolls around, we've heard enough. And the thing is, what I'm trying to get across, because nobody in the media is mentioning it, the fact that the 2/3 majority is of the senators who are present when they vote. Now, allegedly, they're under threat of imprisonment if they don't stay in their seats. They are required to be there. But if these people can't bring themselves to say, yes, Donald Trump is guilty of inciting this insurrection, then what's another rule to break? It's less offensive for them to skip the trial than to vote to acquit that criminal, that man who has the blood of at least 7 people on his hands right now, and so many more who were injured, and so many more who are traumatized, and the country, our democracy. Now, seeing this video, we see how close we came to a mass execution of our legislative branch. It's stunning.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And like I said, you know, unfortunately, I haven't even been able to watch it. I've just been listening to the quote. I mean, as you know, you and the other progressive talk show hosts have been playing it live, and I know I'm missing the video part because I'm just listening on my phone. But
that's okay. At least you're hearing it.
Well.
You know,
yeah,
and
it's just overwhelming.
David, my husband just walked in here to inform me that Fox is ignoring it, is acting like this isn't even happening. This is the problem, because so many of these people who that's where they get their so-called news, they're being told this is no big deal. Tucker Carlson apparently last night said, oh, that boring thing, whatever, and is acting like this is no big deal. This is a big fucking deal.
Oh, hell yes. There's doubt about it. I mean,
yeah.
I there's so many issues. And again, I've been saying this for years. You know, we got to get the money out of politics, number one, obviously. And Senator Lugar, years ago, God rest his soul, you know, he had informed me that we'd have to change the Constitution in order for Americans to put up, like, $10 a year into an election fund or whatever. Well, that's what amendments are for.
Yeah, and that's not true, too, because you have a box on your tax returns that you can check off to put $3 into a fund for election purposes. We can take money out of politics. The problem is the people who are in Congress, the elected officials, don't want to because it's worked fine for them so far. So why do they want to change the system? We need to make them change the system because this is broken. I'm going to run because I want to get some more of these clips in. But thank you so much for calling, and thank you for calling your senators. I hope everybody follows your lead.
Thank you, Nicole. God bless you. Hey, thanks for being a Facebook friend. If I can leave you with one fun thing.
Yes.
Maybe to bring the blood pressure down.
Sure.
If you get a chance, check out Bad Lip Reading. I don't know who these people are, but they're very funny, and they got some stuff about Trump that make you laugh.
Bad Lip Reading stuff is great, but it doesn't work on... Thanks for the call. Yeah, the Bad Lip Reading stuff is great, but it doesn't work on the radio. Because all you're hearing is what you're hearing. And, you know, I always keep in mind that this, although we have a video component, this is first and foremost a radio show. I come from radio. So I always keep in mind the listener who's not watching video. That's why I try to narrate and tell you what's going on the video. For those of you watching on video, it might be annoying. I'm sorry. But again, it's a radio show that happens to have a video component. All right, back to Joaquin Castro, who's got one more point to make here in his arguments.
It's no fun to lose.
Yeah, no shit.
I'm a Texas Democrat.
Yeah, we got that.
We've lost a few elections over the years.
A few. Oh, he got a chuckle from the crowd.
Telling your supporters that the only way you could possibly lose is if an American election was rigged and stolen from you.
Yeah, that's what he did.
And ask yourself whether you've ever seen anyone at any level of government make the same claim about their own election. But that's exactly what President Trump did. He truly made his base believe that the only way he could lose was if the election was rigged.
Yeah.
And senators, all of us know and all of us understand how dangerous that is for our country.
If you didn't before, you do now.
Because the most combustible thing you can do in a democracy is convince people that an election doesn't count, that their voice and their vote don't count, and that it's all been stolen.
And that's what he did.
Especially if what you're saying are lies.
Over and over and over again. So Eric Swalwell's coming up next, and he's going to talk more about the specific language. Trump, again, he doesn't know a lot, but he understands marketing. And the way, like, for instance, advertising works is nobody runs a radio or television commercial just once because it's the repetition. So there are studies that tells you how many times a person has to hear a particular radio commercial or a song before it makes an impression. So it's the repetition that drives it home. So Donald Trump's Stop the Steal is a phrase that he had back in 2016. Remember, if you can think back that far, if your brain isn't fried from 4 years of Trump, back before the election day in 2016, he was already building that narrative saying, oh, well, if we lose, it's just because this is a rigged election. Everything's rigged. It's all rigged. It's a phony. It's fake. It's rigged. He said it over and over and over again. And hold on a second. And then when he won, by losing the popular vote by 3 million votes. But when he, quote, won, you never heard about the rigged election again until he lost this time. All right. So I see this is a call coming in from New Mexico where I have a couple of trolls there. So, hi, who's this?
Hey, Mike, it's Jonathan.
What?
Mike.
I can't hear you. Why? What?
Mike, it's Jonathan.
Okay, you're breaking up. I can't hear you. You got one more try.
All right. So I heard you put David on the phone or on the show. And he was equally adept at dropping F-bombs as you are.
Okay, I can't hear you. All right. Hi, who's this?
I'm a couple of trolls there. So, hi, who's this?
Oh, you got to turn your radio down because I'm hearing me.
What?
Okay, well, sorry. When you call in, I don't want to hear myself coming back because I can't take your call. All right, let's go back to next up was Eric Swalwell. And Eric Swalwell here in this clip is going to explain how, although the election was already over, Donald Trump was still soliciting for money and spent $50 million after the election pushing this call to come to the Capitol and burn down the Capitol, I guess.
To stop the steal and amplify his message.
Stop the steal and amplify his message.
They were released nationally, played in video ads, online advertising, and targeted text messages. They used the same words and phrases that President Trump had been spreading for months, that the election was full of fraud.
Hold on.
To stop the steal. But now they had a specific purpose. How do we know that purpose? These ads were designed to run all the way up to January 5.
Huh, how interesting.
And then they stopped.
And then they stopped. $50
million
worth of ads.
Deliberate planning to target his base to rally around that day.
Wow.
And it wasn't just his ads. He continued to use his own platform. He told his supporters, who truly believed their victory had been stolen and who were ready to fight, when, where, and how to stop what he believed was a steal.
Wow. There can be no doubt.
Donald Trump would issue a deliberate call to action. And just like in his ads, that was action. That action centered around
a tweet.
January 6th.
Here's a tweet from December 19th. The tweet reads, Peter Navarro releases 36-page report alleging election fraud more than sufficient to swing victory to Trump. This is a Donald Trump tweet, by the way. The date, again, December 19th. A great report by Peter. Statistically impossible to have lost the 2020 election. That is a lie. That is a lie. A flagrant, blatant lie. And then he goes to say, big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there. Will be wild. And in case you're wondering, this tweet came in at 1:42 a.m. Yeah, that's the stable president of the United States. Oh, my God. All right. To the phones. If I can figure out how to unmute you because I just muted you. Hold on a second. Damn it. All right. Can I unmute you? I don't know. Oh, there we go. No, you're still muted. Caller, I'm sorry. I can't figure out how to unmute you. I'll give it one more try here. Audio settings. Ah, here we go. Okay, you still there? Hello?
There you go.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, it's Louise.
Hi, Louise.
I'm calling from Manhattan. One of the things I wanted to ask was, because I can't find it again,
yeah.
Was it was my understanding that during the insurrection that McCarthy called Jared, and Graham called Ivanka,
yeah,
to have him shut it down.
Oh, really? How interesting. He didn't. For hours, this went on,
no,
and he said
nothing.
No,
I know
nothing.
He didn't, but I know this is out there. That's the only thing. I wondered if you'd seen it.
I haven't. I wouldn't. I don't doubt it. I mean, I'm sure, look, their lives were in danger. I'm sure they tried whatever they could to get this stopped. But Trump apparently was sitting in his office watching it. The descriptor,
yeah,
the adjective was gleefully,
yeah.
Gleefully. He was watching it gleefully.
Yes, and McCarthy was there with him.
Unbelievable.
And I know, I don't know if it was a Bloomberg, I don't know where I read it, or it was the Financial Times, I don't know. But
Senators.
Anyway, I think that's really important, because, and I hope that they bring it up. That's all I wanted to say was
okay.
That there were people there who were telling him to stop it.
And he refused to. He refused
yes.
to. Yep. All right. Louise, thank you for calling.
Right.
I appreciate it. I'll keep
all
an
right,
eye out for that. Thank you. All right. So moving right along, and I'm going to stay on a little late today. So I'm giving a warning to our friends both at the Progressive Voices Network that I'm not going to sign off in 3 minutes. If you want to stick with us, come on over to NicoleSandler.com/listen-live, because I'm going to keep going for a little while. So Eric Swalwell did his thing. He was showing how this was a concerted marketing effort. Trump spent over $50 million of the money he kept raising, allegedly for his legal defense, to promote this Stop the Steal call to arms. So Swalwell then, he's talking about the post-election provocation, during which Trump tried to continue to convince his followers that the election was rigged. He cast it in combat terms. You were either with him or fighting against him. He put out hundreds of tweets. He called into radio shows. He lied about midnight vote dumps and dead people voting. All lies. He talked about votes going up to the sky, whatever the fuck that means. On December 5th, he tweeted, between Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona and Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia, the Democrat Party could not be happier. By the way, both of those men are Republicans who both supported Donald Trump, but they wouldn't push his big lie. They wouldn't try to upend democracy to steal the election for their guy. You know, I told you, this is all projection. Everything they do, everything they accuse the left of doing, is what they do themselves. When they say stop the steal, they stole it. Or they were trying to. So then Trump, again, back to this tweet from December 5th, he's calling out Doug Ducey, governor of Arizona, and Brian Kemp of Georgia, and says, they fight harder against us than do the radical left Dems. If they were with us, we would have already won both Arizona and Georgia. No, Trump, you fucking piece of shit. That's not how it works. Because even some of the most hardened partisans don't believe in stealing elections, which is obviously the way you work. And any Republican senator who votes to acquit him after this, shame on you. You deserve the same treatment that Trump will hopefully get. And I'm hoping he winds up in jail. All right, we're now officially done with Progressive Voices. It's now 6 o'clock, but I'm going to keep going. Trump focused on Michigan, pointed to Detroit, targeted the governor, said there were more votes in Detroit than people. Another lie. About half of registered voters voted there. Not more than the number of registered voters, about half. Protesters supporting Trump then surrounded the Michigan Secretary of State's home and shouted that she was a traitor. Plenty of evidence that Trump's words had consequences. If he wanted to stop the threats and violence, he could have, but he didn't. Instead, he continues to lash out at Republicans who were refusing to overturn the election results. The very day before the Electoral College met in the states, he was active on Twitter with more lies and more threats. On December 13, there's two tweets, one from Trump saying, the rhinos that run the state voting apparatus have caused us this problem of allowing the Democrats to so blatantly cheat in their attempt to steal the election, which we won overwhelmingly. How does he, you know, I don't know how he was allowed to propagate these lies for so long. No, he didn't win overwhelmingly. He lost overwhelmingly. And then he continues, how dare they allow this massive and ridiculous mail-in voting to occur? There's nothing wrong with mail-in voting. He just thinks anything that is not a vote for him is illegitimate. And then he posted, they tweeted, again, December 13th, tens of millions of haphazardly ballots sent. What? God, he can't even write. With some people getting 2, 3, or 4 ballots, we will never give up. That is all complete. Oh, I thought I had my bullshit up here. Come on. Don't I have a bullshit here somewhere? Come on, bullshit. Where's my bullshit? God, here's my bullshit. That is
bullshit.
Thank you. It was worth the wait. So then on December 14th, it was official. The Electoral College made it clear that Biden had won the election. The outcome was clear. Trump should have conceded and recognized the will of the American people. It was time for a peaceful transition of power. But that's when Eric Swalwell suggested, he said. But then Trump directed all of the rage that he incited toward January 6th. You see, they got past the certification on December 14th. Then everything was heading towards January 6th. And that's when, in mid-December, he began spending $50 million to, quote, stop the steal. There were ads designed to run all the way to January 5th. And it began with, on December 19th, that tweet that I read to you a few minutes ago that said, to show up in D.C. on January 6th, be there, will be wild. Trump prepared his supporters by saying the so-called stolen election was essentially, quote, an act of war. On December 26th, he tweeted, if a Democrat presidential candidate had an election rigged and stolen with proof of such acts at a level never seen before, the Democrat senators would consider it an act of war and fight to the death. Mitch and the Republicans do nothing, just want to let it pass. No fight. As Eric Swalwell pointed out, this was planned and premeditated. He was acting as part of the host committee, and he warned us that he knew what was coming. He made them believe that their victory was stolen so he could incite them to use them to stop the certification of the election. Stop the steal rallies. These crowds were ready to fight. This is what he deliberately led to our doorstep on January 6th. And with that, the morning session ended. That was the end of Eric Swalwell's presentation for this morning. They are making a direct correlation between the words that Trump spoke, the money he spent on ads, perpetuating this lie that the election was stolen. And, you know, he said it over and over again. You know more than I do, he'd say to the press. Don't you dare speak for me. Don't say what I know. I know that you are a con man. You're a piece of walking shit who has conned half of this country, at least 71 million of us. And now it's time for it to end. We saw, and those senators, those 50 Republican senators, who 44 who are saying, oh, this was an unconstitutional bullshit. What he did was not only unconstitutional, it was treason. He got Americans killed when it's his job to protect and defend them. CNN, at this time, when the break came up, CNN was reporting that, quote, some Senate Republicans are being purposefully defiant and not looking at the House manager's presentations. They are pretend flipping through files or reading and not paying attention. Per Senate rules, the cameras in the chamber cannot broadcast their behavior. This is the deal that they made on the rules of the hearing, that the camera would be fixed on the speaker speaking and not show anybody in the seats. Sickening. Absolutely sickening. I should take a time out now, but we're going to keep going because they came back. They took a 15-minute recess. And first up after the break was Madeleine Dean, not Madeline Dean, but Congresswoman Madeleine Dean from Pennsylvania. And it was her assignment, I guess, to set out to show Trump's efforts to retain the presidency, because she goes into great detail. More than 62 court cases all rejected the big lie. Every single court rejected the claim that the election results were valid. Here's a little bit of Madeleine Dean.
Become numb to this.
Oh, wait, Trump, I want you to hear what she said. Hold on. She said, we can't become numb to this. And I think we did for so long. We'd see his tweets and go, oh, he's tweeting again. But I think with time and distance between us and his tweets, we're now able to be shocked about them again.
Senators, we must not become numb to this. Trump did this across state after state, so often, so loudly, so publicly. Public officials like you and me receive death threats and calls threatening criminal penalties, all because Trump wanted to remain in power. These public officials exercised great political and personal courage in the face of unprecedented pressure from a president of the United States. Senators, ours is a dialogue with history, a conversation with the past, with a hope for the future. Senators, I thank you today for your kind attention.
Okay, so Dean, also, she set out the case. She zeroed in on the Wayne County Board of Canvassers based in Detroit, who certified the results. Trump, you might remember this, pressured the two Republican members of that board to reverse themselves. Remember, he flew them into D.C.? He then continued to put on the pressure. He hosted Republicans from Michigan to the White House. Then he spoke via phone, held up at a Pennsylvania legislative policy hearing. Rudy Giuliani held the phone up to the microphone in this hearing, in which, again, he claimed he won the election in Pennsylvania. He didn't. Then he invited those officials to the White House, like he had done with the officials in Michigan, telling them to disenfranchise voters in their state to let him win. This is unheard of. This never, no president has ever sunk this low to try to hold on to power. Then he pressured the governor of Georgia and the Georgia Secretary of State. And threats of violence to them and their family were the result, and he knew. Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, Republican, Trump supporter, by the way, published an op-ed in USA Today about the death threats to him and his family. And after that ran, after Trump knew that he and his family were getting death threats, Trump goes on television and calls him an enemy of the people and a disaster. He's a disaster. Then he pressured the governor and again pressured Raffensperger to, quote, find the fraud. There was no fraud. Madeleine Dean reminded us of the phone call that was taped between Trump and Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, where Trump threatened him with potential legal action if he didn't find the votes necessary to manufacture or win. Public officials received death threats so that Trump could hold on to power. Madeleine Dean asked the senators not to forget this and not to overlook it. Ted Lieu was up next, congressman from Southern California. Ted Lieu is awesome. He talked about how he was in the military, he was in the Air Force, now he's in the reserves. He believes that America is exceptional. And he asked, how did our exceptional country get to the point where a violent mob attacked officers, defiled the Capitol? And his answer was, President Donald Trump ran out of nonviolent ways to stay in office.
President Trump said in Georgia on January 4th.
And I hope Mike Pence comes through for us, I have to tell you. I hope that our great vice president comes through for us. He's a great guy. Of course, if he doesn't come through, I won't like him quite as much.
Oh, God. God, he's stomach churning.
Behind closed doors, President Trump applied significant pressure to his second in command. Multiple reports confirm that President Trump used his personal attorneys and other officials to pressure the vice president. Trump reportedly told almost anyone who called him to also call the vice president. According to reports, when Mike Pence was in the Oval Office, President Trump would call people to try to get them to convince the vice president to help him.
Oh, my God.
And President Trump kept repeating the myth that Pence could stop the certification to his base to anger them, hoping to intimidate Mike Pence. On the morning of the rally on January 6th, President Trump tweeted, all Mike Pence has to do is send them back to the states. And in all caps, he wrote, and we win. Do it, Mike. This is a time for extreme courage.
Oh, my God. Well, it's not true.
President Trump later went on to attack Pence nearly a dozen times in his speech at the Save America March. Privately, in person, before Pence headed to oversee the joint session on January 6th, President Trump again threatened Pence. You can either go down in history as a patriot, Mr. Trump told him, according to two people briefed on the conversation, or you can go down in history as a pussy.
A pussy. Nice talk from our president. Yeah, he likes that word.
As a veteran, I find it deeply dishonorable that our former president and commander-in-chief equated patriotism with violating the Constitution and overturning the election.
Yeah, you think? He also showed a couple of tweets, one from Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, yes, Mr. Christian himself, Donald Trump, tweeted, "I saved at least 8 Republican senators, including Mitch, from losing in the last rigged for president election. Now they, almost all, sit back and watch me fight against a crooked and vicious foe, the radical left Democrats. I will never forget." And he capitalizes, "never forget." That's wrong on just so many levels that you don't need me to explain. On December 29th, he tweets, "Can you imagine if the Republicans stole the presidential election from the Democrats? All hell would break out. Republican leadership only wants the path of least resistance. Our leaders, not me, of course, are pathetic. They only know how to lose. P.S. I got many senators and congressmen, congresswomen elected. I do believe they forgot." He's two. Sorry, that's giving a 2-year-old not enough credit. He called Republican officials who would not support his lie the Surrender Caucus. Ted Lieu told us these things in his time speaking this afternoon. Also, he pressured our Justice Department after coming after senators and members of Congress. Attorney General Barr pursued voter fraud investigations even after a huge number of Justice Department officials objected. But then Barr admitted he found nothing. He announced there was no wide-scale election fraud and that any minor fraud had no impact on the outcome. Barr, quote, resigned a few days later. Apparently, he said that Trump's theories about a stolen election were, quote, bullshit. Trump then pressured the acting attorney general, Rosen, who would also not play ball with him, wouldn't reopen the investigation. And so then Trump tried to replace him with this Clark guy. That only didn't happen because the rest of the Justice Department said they would resign in protest. So then, sorry, I jumped ahead for that, but you needed to know that's what happened with the Justice Department. Next, Trump turned on Vice President Pence. He decided that because Pence presided over the joint session certification of election results, that he had the power to overrule the will of the people in a democratic election. He doesn't. He didn't. But Trump still attacked him to persuade followers. And the morning of that joint session on January 6th and the speech and many tweets, Trump tweeted, among other things, "All Mike Pence has to do is send them back to the states and we win. Do it, Mike. This is a time for extreme courage." No, Donald Trump, that is extreme
bullshit.
Everything he fucking says is a lie, and these idiotic lemmings believe him. These people stormed the Capitol with weapons. They were going to hang Mike Pence and murder Nancy Pelosi. And in a face-to-face meeting, Trump told Mike Pence, "You can either go down in history as a hero or as a pussy." This is the guy you want to risk your future career, your reputation, your legacy and history to protect? That piece of human excrement? And I, you know, I hesitated before the word human because I don't think he is. Next up was Delegate Stacey Plaskett. Delegate Stacey Plaskett represents the U.S. Virgin Islands. And Jamie Raskin introduced her, saying that she's the first delegate, because she doesn't have an actual vote in Congress, but the first delegate to ever be on a team of impeachment managers. Again, there have only been 4, so that's not that big a deal. But she was also his former law student at American University, where he taught. You know what? Before I get to that, I got to show you something else that came in here. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Let me give credit where credit is due. Although I recorded everything and I watched everything and I took very copious notes, there's no way I could have pulled all this together on my own. So the video clips came courtesy of Aaron Rupar, who you should be following on Twitter, A.T. Rupar. He works for Vox, and he posts clips of everything, and he's on top of it. And Jennifer Taub, at Jen Taub, who is she's the author of Big Dirty Money. I think is the name of the book. She's going to be on with us on Friday for a few minutes anyway, because she is live tweeting the shit out of these hearings. And if you want to play by play, blow by blow, read her Twitter feed. So I'm just trying to pull all the elements together. So Lou, here's, I mentioned this at the very beginning, what he attributed Trump's actions to, when I said he ran out of nonviolent options to maintain power. Here he says it.
President Donald J. Trump ran out of nonviolent options to maintain power.
There you go.
I began today by raising the question of how we got here. What you saw was a man so desperate to cling to power that he tried everything he could to keep it. And when he ran out of nonviolent measures, he turned to the violent mob that attacked your Senate chamber on January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
As you cast your vote after this trial, I hope each of you will think of the bravery of all these people who said no to President Trump because they knew that this was not right, that this was not America.
This was not America. Thank you, Ted Lieu. Oh, my God. Yes. One other thing he told, and I did he tell this story? I must have pulled this. You know what? It was Stacey Plaskett. Let me jump ahead to Stacey Plaskett, who, again, she's the one from the Virgin Islands, because at some point in her section, she talks about, remember in Texas where the caravan of Trumpers and pickup trucks with the flags tried to run a Kamala Harris campaign bus off the road? We have that. But first, let me go to Stacey Plaskett of the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Women for America First had initially planned for the rally goers to remain at the ellipse until the counting of the state electoral slates first was completed, just like they had remained at Freedom Plaza after the second million MAGA march. In fact, the permit stated in no uncertain terms mm-hmm. that the march from the ellipse was not permitted.
Not permitted.
It was not until after President Trump and his team became involved in the planning that the march from the ellipse to the Capitol came about, in direct contravention of the original permit.
Wow.
This was not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence.
None of this was.
None of this
Donald
was.
Donald Trump, over many months, cultivated violence, praised it. And then when he saw the violence his supporters were capable of, he channeled it to his big, wild, historic event. He organized January 6th with the same people that had just organized a rally, resulting in substantial violence, and made absolutely sure this time these violent rally goers wouldn't just remain in place. He made sure that those violent people would literally march right here to our steps, from the ellipse to the Capitol, to stop the steal. His cavalry. This was deliberate.
This was deliberate. Here's another clip from her.
The truth is usually seen and rarely heard. Truth is truth, whether denied or not. And the truth is, President Trump had spent months calling his supporters to a march on a specific day,
yep,
at a specific time,
yep,
in specific places to stop the certification. And leading up to the event, there were hundreds of posts online showing that his supporters took this as a call to arms to attack the Capitol. There were detailed posts of plans to attack
detailed
online.
Posts
law
of
enforcement
plans.
Warned that these posts were real threats and even made arrests days leading up to the attack. And yet, in the face of all this, these credible warnings of serious, dangerous threats to our Capitol, when those thousands of people were standing in front of President Trump, ready to take orders and attack, this is what he said. We're going to the Capitol, and we fight.
We fight
like hell.
We fight like hell.
And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Wow.
And that's why this is different. And that's why he must be convicted and disqualified.
Makes sense to me. So that's Stacey Plaskett of the U.S. Virgin Islands. And another part, she talked about the debate when Chris Wallace asked Trump to condemn the Proud Boys and white supremacists. And he said, quote, stand back and stand by. Do you know what happened after that? The Proud Boys adopted stand back and stand by as their slogan. They created merchandise. Hold on, this is kind of primitive, but I'm going to pull. Oh, shoot, I can't. Sorry, because it's on the other screen. I wonder if I can bring it over from here. Hold on, I'm trying all different ways to to bring you. Damn it. Here we go. Okay, so I can. So here's this. It's going to be in the corner of the picture for those of you watching video. You will see on the October 25th Times Square Trump rally. Sorry, it's just it's on my notes. There, right there, is the logo. It's on the back of a Proud Boys jacket. It has PB in the middle, and it says stand back and stand by. He made merchandise. They made merchandise out of it. They took his alleged warning to stand back off to as a call to arms. They made it their logo. I'd say I'm shocked, but I'm not shocked. I'm really not shocked. I mentioned the video of the bus. Okay, so you heard the story, and I don't know where this falls in my narrative. I think I lost track here somewhere, but it's in my stream of videos, so I'm just going to go with that next, where we heard that a campaign bus that Kamala Harris wasn't on it at the time, but it was in Texas. They were going to a rally that was subsequently canceled after these MAGA trucks with flags flying surrounded the bus, sideswiped it, and ran it off the road. And you would think Trump would condemn that kind of behavior. Not only didn't he condemn it, he tweeted this, and just know the video, he put the music to it.
3, 2,
and it says, I love
one,
Texas.
Go! Welcome to the
And it's a video, for those of you listening, of these pickup trucks surrounding the Biden-Harris bus in Texas, sideswiping it and running it off the road.
The President of the United States tweeted a video of his supporters trying to drive a bus off the road.
There you go. Okay. Again, the whole thing. Okay. So then he saw that there was an investigation and he defended his supporters' attack. He clearly knew he was inciting violence, but he praised the violent supporters as patriots. On November 1st, he tweeted above a statement from Tony somebody, that said, new, very short statement from the FBI confirming that they are investigating incident Friday involving Biden bus. FBI San Antonio is aware of the incident and investigating. No further information is available at this time. And Trump tweets that out and says, in my opinion, these patriots did nothing wrong. Did nothing wrong? He continues, instead, the FBI and Justice Department should be investigating the terrorists, anarchists, and agitators of Antifa who run around burning down our Democrat-run cities and hurting our people.
Bullshit.
Again, the man lies as he breathes. This is all bullshit. And you idiots who believe him, you need to have your heads examined. So, and then there's evidence. There's photographic evidence because the people involved in trying to run the Biden-Harris bus off the road, who he praised as patriots, were there. They showed up on January 6th. The Proud Boys he encouraged to stand back and stand by did just that. They were at the Second Million MAGA March on December 12th, where they tore down in D.C. the Black Lives Matter banners from the black churches and everything else. They shouted, destroy the GOP. The message is to destroy anyone who will not let Trump stay in office. And he tweets out about that Second Million MAGA March. We have just begun to fight. This is a man who incited these people to violence, to insurrection at the Capitol, over and over and over again. Trump invited them, and his team knew about the plan to violently storm the Capitol. It was circulating on the dark web. They monitored those sites. The exact thing that happened on January 6th was their goal. Let me read to you a few more descriptions here. Some members of the mob had maps, detailed ones. There were hundreds of these posts monitored by the Trump administration about storming the Capitol. They had detailed posts about preparation, using earpieces to communicate, and in today's videos, we saw a number of those with the earpieces. The invaders thought Trump would help them. Thought that he'd order the National Guard to stand down. They thought the 2,000 Capitol Police, you know, the ones he couldn't control, were weak. It was no secret. It was all over the news. For days leading up to the rally, I implored you on this program, stay home. Don't go there. Give them the streets to themselves. Let them do whatever they want to each other. Stay away. Because I knew. You knew. We all knew. Violence was expected and predicted. Police warned about violence and weapons at the event. The mayor of D.C. cautioned residents to avoid the area. The Washington Post reported that the FBI said extremists were going to Washington, D.C. to commit, quote, violence and war. A supporter said, quote, go there ready for war. We get our president or we die. This is serious shit. And there were arrests leading up to that Stop the Steal rally. I hate using his marketing tools. Six arrests in relation to planned protests related to ammunition and assault, all in public view, included the leaders of the Proud Boys arrested with weapons that he planned to share with others. The Washington Post reported that the FBI said extremists were going to Washington, D.C., I already read this, to commit violence and war. But in the face of this, when thousands were standing in front of Trump ready to attack, he said, quote, we're going to the Capitol and we fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. As Stacey Plaskett said, that's why he must be convicted and disqualified. Madeline Dean came back and she got kind of emotional because she was there. She was in that very chamber when they breached the building, when they broke in. And well, here's what Madeline Dean said.
I stood with colleagues in the gallery above the House floor to observe the Arizona challenge. Moments later, police radios reported a breach of the Capitol grounds. Someone shouted up to us, duck, then lie down, then ready your gas masks. Shortly after, there was a terrifying banging on the chamber doors. I will never forget that sound. Shouts and panicked calls to my husband and to my sons. Instructions to flee, and then the constant whirring of the gas masks filtering the air. The chamber of the United States House of Representatives turned to chaos.
Yeah. Turned to chaos. All right. Then, well, let me play another clip from her.
And Capitol Police were forced back to the steps of the Capitol. At 1:10, the president ended his speech with a final call to fight and a final order to march to the Capitol. At 1:45, the president's followers surged past Capitol Police, shouting, "This is a revolution!" Just after 2:10, an hour after President Trump ended his speech, the insurrectionist mob overwhelmed Capitol security and made it inside the halls of Congress. Because the truth is, this attack never would have happened but for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came, draped in Trump's flag, and used our flag, the American flag, to batter and to bludgeon. And at 2:30, I heard that terrifying banging on House chamber doors. For the first time in more than 200 years, the seat of our government was ransacked on our watch.
Wow. And with that, they took another recess. Stunning. There was a lot of video shown today, security video from the Capitol that hadn't been seen before. This one, and I don't think this was security video because I believe there's audio on this, but this is previously unseen. Donald Trump fans storming the Capitol. And, well, just watch, listen. This is Trump telling them to go, right? At 12:15 at the rally, he's telling them to go to the Capitol. Listen to what they're saying. Hard to hear, I know. Sorry. Yes, yes, you hear this woman. Storm the Capitol! Invade the building! Invade the Capitol building. Yeah. They were so far back because there were so many people there for the Stop the Steal rally. But they heard his words. They heard him tell them to storm the Capitol, take the Capitol. While Trump spoke, around 12:20, some attendees began marching. Large segments of the crowd were at the Capitol, listening to his speech on cell phone broadcasts. At this time, the northwest side of the Capitol was breached. At 1:10, which you just heard Madeleine Dean say, with a final order to fight at the Capitol, his followers surged at police and said, "This is a revolution." After the speech ended, the mob overwhelmed. And then she talked about hearing the banging on the doors. And for the first time in 200 years, the seat of government was ransacked on our watch. At that point, they broke again. I could keep going, but maybe I'll hold on to the rest of it because this is going to continue tomorrow. Actually, it's going to continue tonight. Are they back? They might even be back. And did I close out? You know what? I closed it out. I'll tell you what. I'm going to sign off for now. We will pick up tomorrow. I will record what happens tonight. I will bring you up to date. There's nothing else that's important at this moment. There's nothing else we should be talking about. And I understand Fox, again, has ignored what happened today. One more time, let me implore you, if you haven't yet done it, they are back. If you haven't yet done it, please, please call your Republican senators and tell them that it would be a complete dereliction of their duty if they were to acquit this man, that based on the evidence that you've seen, there's no question. And if they're too afraid of the voters to do the right thing, then just stay home. If they're not there, then they're not counted as against the number of which 2/3 are needed to convict. All right. With that, I'm going to sign off for today. We'll pick up here tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for caring. Because if we don't, nobody will. See you tomorrow. Peace out.